Over the Mall is brought to you by Soccer America. Soccer America, the soccer paper of record. Go to socceramerica.com and sign up for your subscription today. More information on all our sponsors at overtheball.com/sponsors.
Hey, this is Bob Lee, and you're listening to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn, the world's game from an American perspective.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Over the Ball. Dave Gallego here. You will not be hearing the voice of my normal co-host, Kevin Flynn, today, as Kevin is traveling with his girlfriend in Asia. And I should say girlfriend in quotations because I've actually never even met her. So filling in for Kevin this week will be soccer journalist John Bolster. Friends of the show will remember that John was actually a guest of ours just several weeks ago. John, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Dave. Good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. So what do you think of this excursion to Asia? What do you speculate that he's doing? I mean, have you ever actually met his girlfriend?
You know, I cannot confirm her existence either, Dave. I have not seen her in the flesh. This could be a what was that football player
the guy from Notre Dame, right?
Yeah. I don't know if Kevin's being catfished. He may be finding out the hard way in Asia as we speak. I don't know.
Well, we'll find out. And, you know, you never know. They might take one of his kidneys, God forbid. You never know. This could be a real crazy excursion for the poor guy.
I'm excited to find out.
So, yeah, on today's show will be soccer referee David Gerson. And David has a podcast and a website, Refs Need Love Too. So it's going to be fun chatting with him because we've never actually had a referee on with us. So we've got some fun questions and we're going to delve into some more serious questions. And but, you know, listen, before we get to David, John, we really have to talk because just literally minutes ago and folks out there, we tape at 5 p.m. Eastern time. So we just literally had an English Premier League game that just came to an end. So first up is the English Premier League. And these past 2 days, today included, are kind of reminiscent of what the final weekend would look like in the NFL. And not unexpected, a lot was on the line. So did you watch today's Man City game?
I did, yes. Tottenham hosting Man City with a lot riding on it for both teams and also for Aston Villa, which we can get to in a second. But not surprisingly, Manchester City got the job done. They won 2-0. Really, they're just such a nerve. Their nerve never falters, this team. They're just unintimidated by any moment. They're ready for anything. They perform when it matters. They lost their goalkeeper, Ederson, today to an injury. He came off. The backup goalkeeper comes in and makes a game-saving save on Son. They're up 1-0. Son gets a breakaway. And Ortega comes up with a huge save to preserve the 1-0 margin. And then they drew a penalty at the other end and ended up winning 2-0.
Yeah.
And Dave, they're inching closer to their fourth straight Premier League title. I didn't realize. I thought that was a Premier. If they do achieve it, I thought it would be just a Premier League record. But it's actually a record no team in the history of English football has won 4 straight championships.
You bring up a great point. Yeah, so they were aiming to win the league for the fourth year in a row, as you just alluded to. That's obviously in for NFL fans here in the States on this side of the pond. I mean, you're looking at like the New England Patriot territory. So you know, they need a win today to go 2 points ahead of the Gunners for this weekend's final round of fixtures. And it was crucial to get this win because the Gunners actually held a superior goal difference, which was the first tiebreaker. And then a tie would have meant that, assuming they tied, Man City would have needed to make up a 3-goal difference and then match Arsenal's result on Sunday, while a defeat would have left the Gunners in control of the title race. So incredibly exciting. And, you know, speaking of the game, you know, it's interesting because, and I'm going to just kind of repeat what the commentator said, they looked at Pep's reaction and they saw a side of him that they haven't seen all season in his frustration level. So the first half, they actually lost the time of possession battle, 55-45. And then, like you say, they just kept pressing. They kept their composure and boom, next thing you know, they have a W.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. And speaking of Pep, there was a moment in that save that I was talking about before when it was 1-0 and Ortega stopped Son on the breakaway. Pep sat down and then laid flat for a split second before popping back up. And he was, you know, I mean, on the turf, not on the bench, like laid down on the turf So he was definitely feeling it. But they, you know, so now going into the final week, the final game, they have a 2-point edge. They're playing West Ham at home, and Arsenal is playing Everton at home. Yeah. So, you know, if Man City, they have to beat West Ham and they win the league. There are other, you know, permutations that could occur. Obviously, if they lose and Arsenal wins the league. If they both tie, you know, City holds on. So, you know, if I were a betting man, I would put money on City to see this thing out.
Yeah, well, they're going into it as the favorites. At least I'm presuming they're the favorites. And actually, both teams will be the favorites. But I think playing at Everton is probably going to be a little bit more difficult than playing at West Ham. But listen, on any given day, who the heck knows what's going to happen, right?
Oh, no, sorry, Dave. It's the other way around. They're both home. So both the leaders, yeah. Arsenal and City, are home next week.
Oh, that's, so, you know, forgive me. You're absolutely right. Yeah. So, well, I'm going to give the edge to Man City. It's hard not to. And again, with the right. with the two point advantage, they're kind of in the driver's seat. And you know, today was you almost felt the tension kind of unwind when they scored that first goal.
Yes, I agree. They got control of the game. They're like, okay, we're just going to strangle this game. You know, we're going to choke this game out, basically. And they were well on their way to doing that until Son's breakaway. And then even after that, obviously they get the penalty and they see it off pretty comfortably. I mean, it's just a professional performance.
I agree. And you know, the first goal, obviously the second goal was a PK, but the first goal, the pass from De Bruyne, this guy, and you know what, you might know better than me, but I think that he is second in EPL history, in terms of being the assist leader. I think he's in second place right now, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I know that assist moved him past Cesc Fabregas. And I know Ryan Giggs is the all-time leader,
yes.
I believe.
Yes.
So De Bruyne may well be second. You're right.
But I think he's second. He's just an absolute pleasure to watch. And it's almost like similar to like watching Roger Federer, where Roger Federer was almost like a computer, how he was able to place the ball exactly where he wanted, or Greg Maddux when he pitched for the Atlanta Braves, he can get it just where he wants to put it, and it's truly a thing of beauty. It's just so wonderful to watch.
I agree. Fantastic passer, can also score goals, as we know. So he's complete midfielder.
Yeah. So let's talk about the other match of importance, and that was us. That was, of course, Aston Villa. They salvaged a 3-3 home draw with Liverpool that, thanks to Man City, basically gets them in a place into the Champions League next season.
Yeah, that's right. That was a wild game yesterday.
Unbelievable.
Villa needed to get a result to stay, you know, to keep their Champions League hopes alive. And now with Manchester City's win today, Aston Villa has officially qualified for the Champions League for the first time
ever. Thank goodness. Like you and I spoke. Oh yeah, you and I spoke about this off camera, if you will, off audio, if you will. We talked about how it's great to have basically not one of the regulars in the Champions League. It's and I talked about how Nottingham Forest back in the day, they won two in a row. So it's great to see a non-familiar name within the top four.
I agree 100%. Just some new blood is always good to you know, change it up for the Champions League.
And
also very happy for Unai Emery and Villa as a whole. I don't know if you saw Emery showing how much it meant to him. His celebration was really, really nice to watch.
It's interesting. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I was listening to Rebecca Lowe yesterday, and she didn't even and her colleagues, they didn't even mention him as a candidate for Coach of the Year, which, I mean, look, if he doesn't win it, okay. But he wasn't even being mentioned.
Yeah, no, I think you'd have to. Getting them to a fourth place finish, Champions League qualification, that is definitely worth consideration. And by the way, the game itself, we alluded to this earlier, was pretty wild. The first goal for Liverpool was a uncharacteristic gaffe by Emi Martinez.
He had it in his hands. Classic case of like a wide receiver in the NFL when he's thinking about what he's going to do next before he actually has possession.
Yes. And so then he bobbled it. And when he went to reclaim it, he inadvertently knocked it into the net.
Yep.
And then, so that put Liverpool up 1-0. Liverpool was up 2-1 later in the game. And the center back for West Ham, Carlos is his name, I believe. Diego Carlos. He had an absolute sitter, Dave. Literally like a foot and a half outside of the goal line and whiffed on it and sprayed it wide of the net. That kept it 2-1. And then Liverpool went up 3-1. And then the stage was set for John Duran, the 20-year-old.
A substitute, came on as a sub.
And bagged a goal in the 85th and a goal in the 88th. The goal in the 85th was spectacular. The goal in the 88th literally bounced off his knee as he was making a run toward the net and looped into the back of it.
Yeah, exactly. So you have the super, sub coming on late in the game, and like you say, he nets two goals. The first one was an absolute laser. Those are my favorite types of goals when you're just shooting a laser from distance, blistering shot. And again, as you say, he tied the game. And like you mentioned, an incredibly fun game to watch. And for the casual soccer fan or football fan, I'd recommend watching the highlights, unless you're somehow able to get the full game, because it was reminiscent of the 2022 playoff game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Bills, in which the Chiefs finally won an OT 42-36. It was that kind of game. It had that type of drama.
Nice. And Dave, you know who John Duran's last team was? The guy who scored the two goals for Villa.
No.
The Chicago Fire. He is in.
Look at that. I like that. You know, it's
fine flag over there.
You know, it's great. The commentators watching the game. The commentators, when Duran came on and he scored that first goal, he's like, "Hungry like the wolf." A little Duran reference. I love it.
There you go.
Yeah. So yeah, great stuff. Just an incredibly exciting past couple of days of action. And yesterday we had some breaking news. You and I spoke about Jesse Marsh being named coach of the Canadians men's national team. So now we will presumably have two American coaches in the World Cup.
Yeah, we will. And be hosting it on top of that. And I got to say, this is a real spicy meatball, Dave. There's a lot to talk about on this
one. Oh, yeah.
We could do an entire segment on it. But I'm going to start with Jesse Marsh's career choices. I sometimes feel like he feels forced into taking an opportunity. Like when he took the job at Leeds, he needed a job. This was in one sense a great opportunity, but on the other side of the coin, he was replacing Marcelo Bielsa at Leeds, a legend, and he's inheriting a team that is going to be in a relegation battle and maybe doesn't have the roster that fits the style of play he wants to play. And I think that this is a similar situation for him taking over Canada. First and foremost, he has 1 month essentially to get this team ready for Copa America. Copa America starts in June, and he's just taking on the team now. It's a national team. You don't get to meet with them every single day and work with them.
Yeah.
So instill his system, his style of play, and check out their upcoming schedule of friendlies going.
Yeah, you beat me to it. Netherlands.
Yes.
I mean, Argentina, Chile, and France. This honeymoon phase might be very brief.
Exactly. They're playing France on June 6th. No, sorry. They're playing Netherlands on June 6th. They're playing France on June 9th. And then they open the Copa America. And I mean literally the opening game of the tournament against Argentina, Lionel Messi and Argentina. So that is a murderer's row of games for him to start off his tenure at Canada.
I agree.
And then also in their group are Peru and Chile, neither one of which is going to be a pushover for them. So, All power to Jesse Marsh. I wish him the best, but he could be out of a job by the end of June. I mean,
you never know. You never know. And when you say this is a juicy topic, it's juicy in many different ways. One way is and I'm sure you were going to allude to this, is a lot of the U.S. fans are upset with the hire, feeling that he actually should have been coaching our squad and not Berhalter.
No, 100%. He's been in the mix for U.S. coaching candidates for a while now. And I think during the Nations League, he was a commentator on television. And, not to tell tales out of school, but he seemed like he was auditioning for the job.
Well, he was beating him up. He was his biggest critic. He was Berhalter's biggest critic. And now they have to face each other.
Yes.
Right?
And he made a comment specifically about Giovanni Reyna, saying I don't know. Just not saying he shouldn't have been called in, but questioning whether he should have been. because he wasn't getting regular game time. Maybe his match fitness and sharpness weren't going to be there. And then after Reyna did pretty well at the tournament, Berhalter publicly alluded to that and kind of called out Jesse Marsh in his post-game press conference. So definitely there is some telenovela drama going on there that could come out in the future. So.
Well, you know, he's going to have a lot of new toys, a lot of high caliber players. He's going to inherit a very athletic team, which I think actually poses well for Jesse Marsh and his coaching style. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. He does have players like Tajon Buchanan, Jonathan David. Who else? His biggest talent is Alphonso Davies, Alphonso Davies is probably the best player in the region. So with those three in particular, you can play you can play this up-tempo, high-pressing sort of style. But I don't know that spreads across the entire lineup. You know, I don't think that Canada has the overall team athleticism, perhaps, to go full bore in the Jesse Marsh style. I also don't think that they have as much overall talent as the U.S. I mean, I think the U.S. are top dogs in CONCACAF, but it'll be interesting to see, that's for sure. And I think if he survives the Copa America and carries the team to the World Cup, it's ultimately great for CONCACAF just to sort of increase the competition level and the intrigue in the region.
Well, if he can finish in second behind Argentina, then that would be a home run for him. I mean, when you look at his resume, some of it is very impressive. However, when he coached Salzburg, I think the record probably was not indicative of his strength in coaching, because that's like taking over the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls. They're a dominant team within that league. So I'm not necessarily a huge Jesse Marsh fan. I know that a lot of people obviously would disagree with that, but I think the jury is definitely going to be out with this hire. And, you know, in terms of the hire, I want to get your thoughts on this. Reading into it, the hire was facilitated by major philanthropic contributions from the owners of the three Canadian-based MLS clubs, which is strange. I don't understand. And then it was supplemented by other private donors. So his title, which is very odd, is MLS Canada Men's National Team Head Coach. And it's likely the appointment would not have happened without any of that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that speaks to how big of a deal this is for Canada and how much they're putting on the line here. Because reading into it, it seems like Marsh had some pretty tall salary demands, and they had to obviously go to outside sources to meet those demands. And this is, keep in mind, you know, assuming he gets through the Copa America hurdle and takes the team to the World Cup, this is a massive moment in Canada's sports history, not just soccer, but sports. Canada's hosting the World Cup. They obviously want to represent themselves well there. So they're putting a lot of eggs into this particular basket.
No, I agree. And quite frankly, Canada, their soccer federation, they don't have money. They're broke. So like you say, they needed that influx of money. So moving on, because we have our guests coming on shortly. I did want to touch on a couple of things. One of which is that Olivier Giroud, it was signed. He's going to join the MLS now as a member of the LAFC team when he leaves AC Milan at the end of the season. And I think this is a great hire. I think that a lot of people will say, oh, we're getting all these has-beens. And a lot of people overseas consider the MLS and the Saudi League to be a quote-unquote retirement league. But I think this is a great, great signing. He's still doing very well this season. Christian Pulisic is basically saying that he was lucky to have graced the pitch with this guy. So a lot. I want to read some of his resume. For example, he is France's all-time leading goal scorer with 57 goals and was a key part of the squad who won the World Cup in 2018. So this guy can still play. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have a problem with his age?
No, I like the signing. I mean, I agree with you that when it comes to signing big-name European players, you're taking a risk that they're going to come here and treat it like a vacation. There have been examples of people who have done that, but there have also been examples where guys really excelled and took it seriously. And I think that he's also still has plenty in the tank. You know, he has 14 goals in Serie A this year, which
absolutely.
I think it's fourth in the league. He's also a really, you know, he's he's a player that brings a lot of attributes to the number nine position. He scores goals. He can hold up the ball and lay it off. I think he's going to be a really useful and effective player for LAFC. He's also joining, they're a good organization. I mean, they won MLS Cup in 2022, and they were in the finals last year in 2023. And they also have Dennis Bouanga, who won the Golden Boot with 20 goals last year. So I think he's joining a good situation, and I think the chances for success are really good. Plus, he's also a fit for LA. You know, he's a great-looking guy. He's got a little movie star quality to him. So I think it's a good fit.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And LAFC desperately needs goal-scoring help because I think they had one game against Nashville. I think they knocked in five goals. But other than that, they've been dormant. So they sorely need this number nine position to step up. They need the help there. So yeah, I'm excited about that. And again, anytime you get a 37-year-old established European player, bring him on.
Absolutely, especially this one.
It's easy for people of the older generation, such as myself, to say, well, you know, they're doing what the NASL did. Well, not really, because now they're not playing on turf. They're playing with other higher caliber players. There's a lot more of an influx of Europeans and Latin Americans playing. So I think it's totally a different thing. So
They have some pretty strict salary structures to make sure that, you know, the league doesn't get too top heavy. And that was sort of what happened to the NASL back in the day, that the big markets, had huge, huge payrolls, and it just sort of imbalanced the league. And MLS from the start has focused on ensuring that that doesn't happen.
Well, they did recently increase their salary cap, though. They're calling it the Messi rule. So they did increase it. But again, it's still a far cry from the NASL. And just one other thing before we wrap up this intro segment. I just wanted to mention that the Philadelphia Union, they signed a 14-year-old midfielder, Kevin Sullivan, whose brother also plays for them. So pretty cool how we have this homegrown talent. I mean, 14 years old is 14 years old.
Yeah, he's a really exciting talent, and he's already been signed. This is sort of a deal within a deal, because Manchester City has already paid $2 million for his services, which they will take on when he turns 18. So he signed homegrown contract with Philly for 4 years, and then when he turns 18, he's going to go over to Man City and play for them, and widely regarded as a generational talent. So it should be exciting to watch.
Yep. Good stuff. So, all right, we're going to take a very quick break. And then when we come back, we are going to speak with our guest, David Gerson. You are listening to Over the Ball. All right, let's bring on today's guest. He is a soccer referee, plus has a podcast and website, Refs Need Love Too. No chuckling out there, no snickering. Both of which provide an honest perspective from the third team on the pitch. His goal is to inspire, educate, and humanize the next generation of referees for their own development and appreciation from the players, coaches, and spectators, and that they need to work alongside. So, David Gerson, welcome to the show, my friend.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for making me your inaugural referee guest. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been instructed to call you Gerson. That feels really weird. Are you sure you want me to call you Gerson? I could easily call you David. I can remember your first name.
No, it's all good. My two best friends in high school were also named David, so it's been the name I've been called for about 35 years.
Gerson. All right. Well, my last name is Gallego, so I've been called Lego Maiego for the past 55 years. So, you can call me Lego Maiego, or you can call me Dave. And you're here with John. Meet my buddy John.
Pleasure, sir.
Dave, welcome.
So, nice, Dave, we have a ton of questions for you, some of which are kind of elementary because we want to ask the questions that everybody really wants to know, and then we've got some more technical things. So we're gonna kind of vary it up a little. So I want to start off with the little question that we have regarding the differences, if any, that you see between the players and the parents now versus when you first started, or even when you first started playing.
Yeah, well, I think there's certainly a different game here in the United States than there was years ago. I mean, now I think we're seeing a much more technical soccer or football, whatever you want to call it, here at a very high level. Many of the coaches that were successful over in Spain and in England have now come here to the U.S. and they're imparting their knowledge. So at the highest levels of youth academy, it is very technical. It is very competitive. And the game has gotten much, much bigger as well. So that is one significant difference. One thing that has become a troubling trend, though, over the last 10 years is a lack of civility amongst each other just here in society that has contributed to some toxicity, and an over competitiveness on the pitch, taking U10, U8 matches and turning them into World Cup finals where tensions overheat. And instead of being a positive environment for the kids on the pitch, winds up being a negative environment for everyone around it. So that has changed. And I don't know if it's just, again, a cultural thing or political environment has changed, but also that we're spending so much more time on digital devices, we rarely interact with any humans anymore. And so then when we come to the soccer pitch, we just let it all out and it gets a bit insane.
And do you find that since the parents are making a huge investment on their kids in the leagues and training, et cetera, do you find that the parents have become a little bit more aggressive, or are they still the same as they've always been?
I don't know. Absolutely. I mean, they're looking for a return on their investment. The youth sports industry in this country is now larger than the value of the entire NFL, which is the largest sporting league in our country. And so that is definitely happening. And it's, again, it's not just at the highest levels of ECNL or MLS Next for your listeners. Again, the highest levels of academy soccer. I will tell you 50% of the emails and questions and messages, and I get about 40 a day, are from parents asking me about U10 and U8 soccer matches. I mean, sending me videos. How is this not a handball? You know, how did he not call that or something like that at U8? And I'm just like, dude, get some perspective. Like, enjoy the fact that your kid's out there playing and having fun and become on a team. Stop worrying about, you know, this, you know, is it a handball or not? But they're spending money for pre-academy or whatever it is, at whatever level is being sold to them as this competitive soccer, and they feel like it should be as if it's the Premier League or the World Cup.
Wow, that's amazing. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm a parent of a youth soccer player, so I've witnessed this firsthand for years now, and there's just so much pent-up anxiety and aspiration and the hopes and dreams, and you can just see that coming out, you know, minute by minute during games. And yeah, I've seen parents arguing calls. Their team is up 4-0, and they're still yelling at the ref. You know, it's like, give it a break, get some perspective, as you say, Gerson. But I kind of want to flip it just a little bit, because you mentioned at the top of your segment here that the level of play has gotten better. Players are more technical. They understand more tactics. They have better coaching. Do you feel like, this is a two-parter, do you feel like the refereeing component has kept up with that? And do you feel like there's, you know, a lot of the guys that I see, a lot of the referees that I see, they're not very well paid. I don't know what training and sort of reinforcement they have. Is there talk of improving that aspect of it? Because I think, one, you'll get better refereeing, and you may, who knows, the parents may never change, but you may mitigate that problem as well.
John, we get nothing. I mean, man, you can get certified as a ref. You take some simple online exam. You do some cockamamie 3-hour, like, basic thing of how to hold your flag, whatnot, and they throw you to the wolves. And then that's it. I mean, I've been a ref now over 10 years. In my first 5 years, okay, and I'm talking, you know, hundreds of matches, not once in that first 5 years did I ever have a developmental assessment or a mentor give me feedback. I mean, wow. You are just literally, you're out there, you're trying to do your best. And that's the thing, you know, these teams where you're talking about like U10, okay, kids who are 8 and 9 years old playing soccer, they might be training 3-4 days a week, playing 2 or 3 games on a weekend, and they're getting coaching from adults who have been properly trained and probably have their D license or their C license, something like that. And you've got a referee who's like a 14-year-old kid who's, you know, just done this online exam, and they're thrown out there, and they've never, like, it's very different when you're a player to a referee. Well, what constitutes a foul? Like, okay, is that a yellow card? Is that not a yellow card? Should I call a penalty? No one gives you that feedback. And you're really, you know, it's a very difficult situation. So the way you get experience is you do matches, okay, over time. Unfortunately, we lose 80% of our referees in the first 3 years, and the number one reason is spectator abuse, and the number two reason is coach abuse. So we don't keep enough referees long enough for there to be good. And is there training or any development out there? No, sir. There's no money in it. There's tons of money in hiring coaches and the private coaching and all of that thing for the players, certainly. There's all this competition in between clubs. Let me tell you, we're independent contractors. You know, there's a bat call that goes out every week. Hey, who can work these games? And they don't care about us afterwards as long as we show up.
Wow. You know, that seems so counterproductive because the amount of money going into the sport with training and then just to have referees out there that are, like you say, thrown to the wolves. You know, I didn't realize that. I figured that for sure you guys would have had a little bit more training than just opening up a manual. I mean, yeah. I took a defensive driving course online and, you know, you're supposed to watch 1,000 videos. I didn't watch any of them, but you know what? Got me a discount. So you sound like you guys could do the same thing and become a ref. Do you officiate both girls and boys games? And if so, what's the difference between them?
I approach them absolutely the same. I will tell you, I think the guys want to talk a little more to the ref and want to advocate for themselves a little bit more. And then obviously speed and physicality changes, but it doesn't change my approach. I am, you know, calm, friendly, professional. I communicate. And I will tell you, that is probably the biggest thing that when you have a really experienced referee versus someone who's a junior referee, I find that a lot of the comments from spectators and from coaches is because there's a vacuum of information. I had a losing coach. Okay, this is a losing coach. They lost the game 4-0. Okay, high school match about 3 weeks ago. And he came up and he said, I love having you as a referee because I feel like I can trust you to ref. And I can go ahead and be a coach. Because if you're not calling fouls, well, then you get people screaming for fouls, right? You know, and if they're not sure what the call was or why a call was made, like, what was that? I don't understand, all that kind of stuff. And that type of communication skills, I mean, that ability to communicate with your physical presence, your mechanics, your verbal communication, to be able to have dialogue with players, takes years to develop. And at the very highest levels, the top 1% of referees, they're getting the training to be able to develop that. But the other 99%, those 99,000 grassroots referees, they never get that training.
That is a huge missing puzzle piece in the U.S. soccer landscape. I mean, that is a real problem. And I also imagine, you know, our soccer world in the U.S. is so patchwork. It's such a quilt. There's not one unified. So even addressing the problem is a really daunting task because you don't have an organizational kind of cohesion. You know?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, I've been at youth sport. I was a coach before I was a referee. So I coached my kids, you know, U6, U8, U10, U12. And then I became a ref as they were transitioning to the higher level academy. My son played in the U.S. Development Academy and the ODP and all that stuff. But my gosh, I mean, there is like a cluster of acronym of words. Like there's the NAL, there's the EA, there's the GDP, there's the MLS, there's the ECNL, RL, and the ECNL, whatever. I mean, the championship, the SCCL, everyone's got them. And so all of this patchwork of leagues, whatnot, are out for their interest. They're trying to get as many kids into their programs and organizations as possible. That's the motivation. You know, whether it's in U.S. club soccer or USU soccer or AYSO or whatever it is, that's their goal is grow. And I will tell you, and I'm not throwing stones here, but you had, you know, Skip Gilbert, you know, on a few episodes ago. Well, Skip told me about 2 years ago that he was going to start this referee, you know, respect program, and it was no ref, no game. Never saw it, you know, but now he's on this 3-on-3, you know, program where he's going to get more kids playing all the time. I mean, that's the motivation for club level is how do I grow my club bigger, bigger, bigger? You know, developing refs, that's just not their priority. It's someone else's problem. And even at the referee level, so we have 50-something state associations that have state referee administrators. I mean, they're on a shoestring budget. You know, they're just trying to deal with all of the, you know, the issues that come in every week of referee abuse. There's very little that they can do with their limited resource, little staff, and limited funds to proactively get out and develop the thousands of referees that are out there that need that development.
Well, you know, looking at one of your podcast episodes, you actually showed a list of opportunities of games you could ref. I guess you have the opportunity to pick and choose where you want to go. So you said that there's just so many games that need refs. What do you do in a case like that? I mean, do you let the parents ref and both coaches have to basically agree that this game will count without a ref?
You know, so we lived in the Netherlands for a while and we played an academy at U10. And over there, I mean, up until U10, they always have the parents referee. Like, not like, you know, little U6 kids, you know, the running around, don't know what to do. I mean, you know, people playing full 11-a-side games with a parent volunteering to ref. you know, each match. And that's just what they did. And they kept the referees for those higher level matches. And most of the world, I'm going to kill you on this one, most of the world, especially throughout Europe, okay, even all the way up until very, very highly competitive, you know, high, high, high academy games, it's one referee. So mm-hmm. if you do get a referee, you don't have assistant, you know, referees, you know, calling offside, you may get a club linesman. Well, good luck with that. I mean, it's hard getting a referee. And I tell you, I would love to see more parents spend some time on the pitch to be a ref. You know, in the state of Utah, they've passed new legislation there, rules in the state of Utah, that if you get thrown out for abusing a referee, okay, the only way you can come back to the sideline is if you referee, I think it's four matches. So you got a ref before you can come back to the sideline. So you could experience how challenging it is and how difficult it is. And it's just not straightforward. Soccer is a very difficult sport to officiate.
Yeah, well, your son actually refs, right?
So it's a very funny story about that. So my son did ref with me for 8 years.
Okay.
And then right before he was going to college, so his first semester senior year of high school, we had an incident where we had a very aggressive player get sent off during a match, and he took a run at my son. And I mean, like, came up, ran, got right in his face. I mean, this guy was a professional player in Mexico, you know, back in the day, whatnot. And I mean, I'm on the other side of the pitch. I took a beeline to separate these guys. It was crazy. But it was the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, we had so many incidents of close calls and people screaming at him. It wound up being like, just he'd get assigned and then the anxiety would build. And he's like, forget it. You know, I don't need this. I can go find another job, earn the same amount of money without having to worry about being beat up. And he stopped. And so funny enough, it's so funny we're having this conversation today. Friday night, he's back from college, poor college student, okay, needs money. He's got like four jobs this summer. And we are reffing a match today. But as you said, okay, I'm taking him to a club that I know the club administrator is going to be there. They've got a fence around the pitch. I never have an issue with coaches. It's a high level of play. They control their parents. So I'm putting him in a safe environment that I know he's not going to deal with the type of stuff that he had dealt with in the past. And so it's even a kid like that who loves the game and was a great referee, so much better than I am as a ref, gave it up because the abuse that he was receiving.
Huh.
Wow. Referees are the Rodney Dangerfields of the sports world. They just don't get the respect that they deserve. It's such a thankless job. Even when you do a great job, the highest compliment a ref can get is you didn't notice him. You know, that means you were perfect. And
that's,
you know, there are no accolades. There's always just the opposite. It's tough. It needs to be addressed. You're doing God's work, person.
Oh, I'm telling you, man, I love it. I tell you, there's a little bit of like a, you know, like a sadomasochism in it. It's like I beat myself up every week to try and get out there. I know I'm going to get abused. I know I'm not going to be perfect. And when I say abuse, I mean, when you finish a match, there's going to be 50% of the people who really don't like you because they lost, whether or not it was your fault. And I'm telling you, whether I made one call or two calls bad all game, let me tell you, they had 30 shots on goal. They had 90 minutes to try and score. That, you know, they only connected 50% of their passes. I tell you, I didn't cause them to lose, but they're not going to like me because they lost. They're going to want to shift that blame to me. But even the team that wins, you know, they might tolerate you, you know, to actually be liked out there. I mean, that is just a foreign idea. When we look at referees in general, you know, they're passing judgment. And we like to villainize them. And we like to dehumanize them. And that's why this negative behavior persists.
Yeah, well, I don't know. John's not going to admit to this, but if you remember back in the day when Bobby Knight threw the folding chair across the court, do you remember that? Gerson, do you remember that?
Absolutely. I mean, of course, absolutely. Yes.
All right. So John, what he does, if a call doesn't go his way, he likes to tip over the stands, even if there's parents on them. He gets a little crazy. You're seeing a totally different side of him today, but I'm just letting you know what we're dealing with.
It's just a lower body working. You know, I'm working on the glutes.
Well, I tell you, you know, the whole reason for me doing the channel, and so now, you know, that I have this channel, Refs Need Love Too, my videos have been watched over 120 million times in the past few years in doing this. And I am not a professional referee, and that gives me the opportunity to do this. Pro referees, they can't talk. They have no social media. They have no social presence. They can't talk about any plays that happen around the world. So there's controversies and commentators who say, oh, that should have been a foul or it's not a foul. And they don't know the laws of the game. And so all I'm trying to do is be like, hey, you know, we're humans. Sometimes we make mistakes. Here's what they probably saw here and why they made the decision they did based on the considerations they're given. And what I'm getting back is so much like thank yous, not only from the refs who are like, finally, someone who gets us and helps people understand what we're seeing, but the parents and the coaches who genuinely want to know and genuinely want to understand why we make calls or don't make calls that we do and the challenges they're in. And it helps them be better parents. It helps them enjoy the game. You know, I think it's so wonderful that we could all enjoy what's going on out there as opposed to just feeling like we've been cheated every match.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know John had some questions about video assistance.
Yeah, well, so you mentioned the pro game now, so let's transition to there a little bit. A thing that it's a point of confusion for me a little bit is when is a referee supposed to raise his flag for offside and when not, you know, as it relates to VAR. I'm thinking specifically of the Champions League semifinal between Bayern and Real Madrid when De Ligt scored that goal, but the flag had already gone up, so the play was not reviewable. Can you shed some light on that for us?
Okay, so first off, that guy is never going to forget that for the rest of his life. And yes, everyone's like, oh, there's no consequences. Oh, are you kidding me? I mean, that guy got railed after that match. Let me tell you, Kalina called him up, absolutely railed into him. He is never going to get close to a Champions League game of that magnitude, probably the rest of his life. Okay, and that's the biggest payday. It's the biggest stage. This guy is messed up in front of millions of people. And let me tell you, it was a mess up. Now, let's also just clarify one thing. He raised his flag, okay? That doesn't make the play not reviewable. It's the fact that the center referee blew his whistle in response to seeing that flag and hearing him yell in his ear, off, 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 and feeling his arm vibrate from the buzzer flag, telling him that it was in what's normally happened and is that assistant referee has seen something so clear and obvious that the player is off that he's raised a flag, pressed the button, and he says, off, 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 in the guy's ear, and the center referee trusted him and then blew the whistle. John, to your point, when we have a professional match and when there is video assistant available to us, video assistant referee, the guidance for the assistant referee is keep your flag down while the attacking sequence plays out. Okay, allow that to continue, even if you know that the player's off, because you have that VAR backup that we can go back and check, because you do not want this situation to happen where it was a very marginal call. It looks like it could have been offside, but it might not have been offside. And it was a key match decision that completely, I mean, very controversially, you know, ended this match. So the guidance is keep the flag down, allow the play to play out. They score. Great. We can go back and review it. If you raise your flag and we blow the play dead, then we can't go back and review that play because everyone stops playing when they hear the whistle. So, you know, to your point, that's the guidance. Keep it down until the attacking sequence plays out. And there was two mistakes in the play, both the assistant referee raising the flag and telling the center referee off, 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 and the center referee not recognizing the situation, blowing the whistle to stop the play.
Mm.
Got it. Well, you know, I've seen sometimes on the flip side of that where it's a very obvious offside and they let it play. And I'm kind of thinking, why are they letting this play? We know it's coming back. Somebody could get hurt. You know, what if a guy blows a hammy while that play is allowed to continue? So I feel like they still need to refine the guidelines a little bit just to get.
John, I will tell you, I could send you about five or six different examples of plays that looked completely off. Okay. When the ball was played over, the dude is 20 yards down the field with no one around him. And everyone's like, oh, he's got to be off. And then they go back to VAR, and you see the center back is running up the pitch while the attacker's running, you know, towards goal, and they pass. And right at that moment, man, right at that moment, the ball was struck. And it's hard. And when everyone looks, you're thinking everyone he's off.
It looks obvious.
But, man, you go back, it's tight. It is not as easy as you would think. I got to be honest.
I feel weird calling you Gerson. So
that's good. Bring it.
Okay, Gerson. So are there any rules that you would like to see changed?
Yeah, there are a few. I think the penalty kick in particular, that being fouled anywhere within the penalty area, that you're awarded a shot from 12 yards out in the center of goal. I think we've all seen penalties given where you have a player who's going out of the penalty area, moving away from goal. They get tripped right on the edge of the penalty area, maybe even down by the goal line. And then they're rewarded with, you know, an 80% likelihood of a goal. Yeah. I would love to see either the penalty spot, you know, pulled back maybe to the edge of the penalty area, 18 yards back, or you get the penalty kick awarded from wherever the foul takes place. I think that would be much more fair. The other thing I would say is VAR. I think there are so many times now, because we're slowing things down to 60 frames a second, that you could have something that really looks very benign on the field and where the referee didn't even call a foul. But man, when you slow it down to 60 frames a second, it makes contact look so much worse. And we've got humans there for a reason on the field. You know, let's trust their judgment a little bit. But when you bring them to the monitor and you show that stud up to the shin area, but on the field it was really light and they were holding up. I mean, come on. I think sometimes it could be, you know, yes, it should have been a foul, you know, okay, a yellow card, but I see too many times where we're going red card because we're slowing it down so much, it makes everything look so much worse. So those are the two main things I'd like to see changed.
Now, doesn't VAR make your job easier, though? I mean, if it's a controversial call where you could have guys waiting in the parking lot for you, but now you say, hey, look, VAR, baby. I mean, doesn't it make your job easier?
Listen, as a referee, there are so many times, like, I'm not a professional ref, but I got to tell you, there are lots of times where I wish I could see that play back. Like, I see it in my mind, again, it's happening in a split second, you know, there's humans and there's bodies flying and, you know, you're maybe not in the perfect angle or it's a fast breakaway and you're busting your butt to get in the right position to see it and there's contact and you got to make a judgment call, like right there, right then at the moment. And the coaches have a different view and the spectators have a different view and you just got this one angle and you've got to make a call that could be a key match decision in the moment. Is, you know, is it a denial of obvious goal scoring opportunity? Is it a fair challenge? Is it a handball? Whatever it is. Yes. Would I love the opportunity to see it from 20 different angles and really be a better judge of that? Certainly. I definitely do. I think there are so many times where VAR has helped us get decisions right. Yes, there are times when they have messed up because guess what? There are humans on the other side of those monitors. And human, you know, instincts or, you know, just predispositions to calls might influence their decision. But I think VAR has definitely been a positive move for the game overall at the professional level.
Gotcha. Well, we have to wrap this up, but I know that John had one question about the MLS.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to get your general take on the state of MLS refereeing, because kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, I feel like refs had to catch up there as well, like they do, you know, in youth sports today.
Yeah, I mean, I think the MLS does a phenomenal job, and we were seeing our referees here in the U.S. now being appointed to, you know, Women's World Cup final with Torrey. We're seeing our male referees making it to, you know, the quarterfinals of World Cups and at the largest stages that are out there. I mean, there's a bunch of really impressive folks. I mean, they have professionalized the training in that league for many, many, many years. I mean, there is always going to be decisions that we can disagree with, but I got to tell you, one thing about MLS referees that I think sets them apart in the world is their use of VAR. You will commonly now see an MLS referee brought to the monitor to review a play where it might be a potential offside, because we don't draw lines in MLS, or there might be a foul or a penalty kick, and the on-field referee will stand up on their own 2 feet and values and knowledge of the laws of the game and say, nope, I don't have it. You know, I'm sticking with my on-field decision. You never see that in the Premier League, ever.
Nope.
They do not have the willpower and the emotional fortitude to stand on their own and look at that monitor and stick with their original call. In the MLS, they give them freedom to do it. They also tell them on offside, if it's too close to call, don't call it. That's it. It's ridiculous. In the Premier League, we're looking at like millimeters, you know, to make decisions. And it's so, you know, arbitrary. Mm. I think we're doing things right here in the MLS.
It brings up the clear and obvious clause. You know, I feel like they underplay that in the Premier League. Like the error has to be clear and obvious for it to be overturned. If a guy's kneecap is in an offside position, maybe you let that go, you know?
Well, I think so. I think the MLS has done a good job. I think the people that they've brought up, I mean, I find them to be impressive individuals. I see them really doing a good job de-escalating situations. I mean, these people are professional, you know, in their home lives as well. I mean, just take Christina Uncle, and I know she's not reffing professionally anymore, but an MBA, you know, she's a lawyer. She's now the CEO of a soccer team. She's a broadcaster. I mean, she's a, you know, gives back in her community. I mean, these are some really impressive people. Yes, do they get villainized? Do people hate them from time to time? But I think they deserve a lot more of our respect. If only they had the opportunity to, you know, be more of a public figure and, you know, talk more about the decisions they made, you know, I'd love to see it. I think that is a direction that we need to go. I mean, I try and be the voice for the voiceless, and I think we need to give these people their voice too. They deserve it.
Yep. Well, speaking of voices, you mentioned before that you heard it all because now everybody's a critic and everybody thinks they know the rules inside out. So I have to ask you, you always hear ref call both ways or ref, are you blind? You hear the same things all the time. What's the funniest comment you've ever heard?
So we wear yellow jerseys here. Yeah. And I had someone yell out, I've seen a better yellow in a box of crayons. I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, because it wasn't really offensive or anything that. It was just funny stuff. I mean, I've heard all sorts of things. I think the call it both ways is just the most ridiculous thing. It's like, I can't tell a team to foul. Like, can you foul more so I can even out my foul count here? And usually happens when you have a low skill team who's just dumping the ball up the pitch and they have no possession. So I don't even have an opportunity to call a foul. And I have another team that's higher skilled and likes to put the ball on the ground and they play expansive football and they dribble through the middle and they draw fouls. Dude, that's not my fault, man. I'm just calling the fouls that are there for me to call. If you dribble and you've got the skill to do that, you'll probably I'll call some more fouls in your favor. So the call it both ways is ridiculous. It's so silly. But yeah, no, you know, a little banter from the stands is good. When it starts to become offensive and insulting language, that's something else, and I've got to address it.
Yeah, well, I love when they think that, like, you have money on the game or something like that. That's always a classic. Like, seriously, I mean, you have absolutely zero interest in who wins. You just want to see a good game.
That's it, man.
But Yeah. Before we wrap it up, we have a new segment. I don't know if you've heard our podcast as of late, but we do a rapid fire question segment called Getting to Know You. Getting to know you. Are you ready, my friend?
I am ready, sir.
Okay, here we go. Mia Hamm or Alex Morgan?
Mia Hamm.
Okay. Messi or Pele? Tough? Very tough.
Messi.
Without hesitation. Better cereal, Raisin Bran or Frosted Flakes?
Raisin Bran. I like my fiber.
Okay. Are penalty kicks a good way to decide the winner?
Absolutely not. Awful. I think we should just keep on playing, go down a player like every 10 minutes. That's what I'd love to see.
That is the spot on right answer. There really are no right or wrong answers, but honestly, there are right or wrong answers. That a boy. Favorite vacation spot, beach, mountains, or city?
Beach.
Okay. Artificial turf or grass? Stupid question.
Grass. Okay. Oh my gosh, as a referee, 100 degrees outside, I'm melting. Give me grass.
All right. Now, you're an ex-goalkeeper, so this is going to be a one that you might have to wrestle with. Casey Keller or Tim Howard?
Oh, Tim Howard.
Without hesitation. Hall of Famer now. Yes. A New Yorker, you can appreciate this one. Costanza or Kramer?
Oh, dude, Costanza.
I love it. Well, what's the last song you downloaded?
This is going to be a little bit embarrassing. I got back into 30 Seconds to Mars again, Jared Leto's band. Okay. I used to really like him. I don't know why I'm downloading that stuff. Foo Fighters is my all-time fader, but 30 Seconds to Mars, I'm guilty.
That's okay, buddy. I appreciate your honesty. Red wine, white wine, beer, or a cocktail?
Oh, beer all the time. I brew my own.
Wow. See, getting to know you. See what we just learned? And finally, best ref, Howard Webb or Colina?
I think Colina, just because he was so unique to the game. Now, funny enough, and he's the head of referees globally now, he would never, ever be allowed to ref now. But what he did in the time that he did it, you know, in the game, it's so unique. It is so distinct. He is such a powerful figure. There will never be another Colina.
Right, Why would he not be allowed to ref now, Gerson?
Yeah, because now it's all about de-escalation and making the players the stars of the show. In his day, he really became the star of the show, and he would literally go head-to-head, chest-to-chest, you know, very fiery personality. And that is the exact opposite of what we're trying to do now in the game. I mean, honestly, if someone came, a player came to me and tried to chest bump me, you know, I'd red card them. I'd probably abandon the match right there because I know too many people who have been physically assaulted, not just verbally assaulted, but physically assaulted as referee. You come into my space, we have a serious problem here. So he was able to do that at a time when that was kind of acceptable and celebrated. That is not acceptable now because what you see on the professional pitch translates down to what happens to us on Saturdays and Sundays, and we can't have that kind of fiery confrontation anymore. Too many people are getting hurt.
Well, listen, the name of the website is Refs Need Love 2, and the podcast and on Instagram, Refs Need Love 2. David Gerson, you are a fantastic guest. You brought a great, great banter, and you answered all of our questions like a champ. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh my gosh, thank you guys so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
John, that was great. He really brought a great perspective and a great attitude to the podcast. I really enjoyed chatting with him, and there's so many other things I wanted to ask, but it's a thankless job, and he was very candid with his answers.
Yeah, I totally agree. Refs really do need love, and he's fighting the good fight for them. It was great to chat with him.
You know, it's shocking that they don't really have much in the ways of training. It's a little startling, actually.
I agree. I thought there would be like a bare bones program in every, you know, league, but there appears to not be. And I've witnessed that firsthand. I mean, recently at one of my son's games, we had a ref who looked like he was smuggling a keg underneath his jersey. And he basically ranged from like one side of the center circle to the other. And he's making calls from 30 yards away. And, you know, it's a pretty high level game. And I'm thinking, come on, man. You know, I completely agree with Dave that everyone should leave the refs alone, but at the same time, they have a standard that they should aspire to. And guys like that are just, you know, they're phoning it in. And you get what you pay for, right, Dave? You know, if you're not paying them what they're worth, you're going to get subpar refereeing.
Yeah, but it's shocking because with the investments that everybody makes within this sport, to have now potentially a subpar ref, it just seems so counterintuitive. It's baffling.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also a detriment to the development of the game here. You know, you would think they would want to shore up that area because it all fits together. You know, the training, the coaching, the facilities, the refereeing are all part of the mission. And they're really neglecting that part of it.
Yeah, because when I was younger playing, I mean, if you found a ref that knew the game, that was a home run. And back then, none of the parents really knew the rules. At least if they did, they were the overwhelming minority. Now, a lot of the parents, having played growing up, they know the rules. So now you could potentially have a situation where the ref doesn't really know all the rules.
Yeah, and the parents know more, and they're not going to be shy about voicing that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But and you know what? He answered the questions right, I have to say. And he's the first one that actually agree with me wholeheartedly about penalty kicks should not be the way to decide a game. I hate that. I absolutely despise that.
What do you think? I mean, I used to be very anti-penalty kick, but now I've come around a little bit because you can't deny that it is extremely dramatic. It's really separate from the game itself. I agree. It's sort of a different competition, but the drama is intense and the pressure is really, really something. As far as like continuing to play extra time and just pulling players off as you go, I have mixed feelings about that. I just feel like the game could get so loose and tattered that it wouldn't really be appealing to watch. One wild card solution, which was actually tried, as you know, back in the day, twice in this country, in the NASL and in MLS, they had a 35-yard shootout.
Yep.
And I don't know if you know this, but both Johan Cruyff and Franz Beckenbauer signed off on that as the best way to settle ties after extra time. So, you know, maybe we bring that back. It's exciting. It's dramatic. It does require skill.
Or maybe do like a 2v1 or something like that. But I'm glad you brought up the NASL because Kevin Flynn always breaks my chops because I frequently refer to the NASL. But the shootout, which is what you're talking about, had a shot clock. Yeah. And it was much better than a penalty kick. I mean, you look at a game, let's say the game is one team is dominating the game and it's tied at the end. For some reason, they couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. Now it goes to PKs, and the team perhaps that didn't really have any legitimate shots during the game now is going to PKs and can flat out win the game. I don't know. I hate that.
It can be tough.
But all right. Well, listen, Franz Beckenbauer, may he rest in peace. Maybe we can get in touch with Naiskins and get his vote to solidify a different way to break the tie.
I'm all for it.
All right, John. Well, listen, it was great having you on. I really appreciate you filling in. And hope you had fun. Hope you enjoyed it.
It was a blast. Thanks for having me.
Well, on behalf of John, this is Dave Gallego signing off. Thank you so much for listening to OTB. Are you down with OTB? Yeah, you know me. OTB. Talk to you soon, people. Army with harmony. Have comments or questions? Give us a call or shoot us a text at 727-914-9998.